I'd like to welcome everyone along, back again. Nice to see you all, or half of you anyway. So, here we are. Text number, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text number 10. Everyone's read the section, of course. No one's going to admit if they haven't. So, someone can just read verse number 10.
Sometimes the mode of passion depicts goodness and ignorance, and other times ignorance depicts goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition of goodness.
Okay, so in this verse here, Krishna is describing, of course, that sometimes one particular mode of mature nature becomes more prominent. Now, can I just ask, who listened to the previous lesson that wasn't here? Last Thursday. Missed that? Missed it? Yep. Okay. Who was here for this? You heard?
No.
So no one heard the previous lesson? You heard the previous lesson? Of those who actually heard the previous lesson? Who was here? They were here? Three? Four here? Of those who weren't here, did anyone hear it at home? Okay. All right. Makes my job a little harder because we've done texts from 1 to 9, and in that lesson there was a huge amount of information about the relevance of this chapter, and literally we covered a lot of the essential points of the chapter from start to finish. And you know, this lesson here, we really are just recapping a part. You'll find it very difficult to actually really sort of pick up the mood of this lesson. I mean, you'll pick up the mood of this lesson, but you've definitely missed a lot. So if you can catch up, you do yourself a good favour. Are there other people who would normally still be coming? Do we have like a rotating group where you sort of get different people each week? Or? There are more regulars,
yeah.
But they do rotate in and out.
Mainly they're pretty regular. I think there's just a drop off with
the regulars have become a bit irregular.
Yeah, they're regular.
The regulars, some of them being.
It might be sick or.
Yes, I know a lot of people are busy. How about we set a task that everyone here asks one person that you know who usually comes along to come along regularly, encourage them, grab one person, encourage them, and if they have any difficulty, if they feel that I've missed too much now, that I might have trouble, just tell them I will personally sit down with them and help them catch up. If anyone feels like that there's some difficulty, but if you could encourage some of the others, because a lot of people have put a huge amount in, and for them to miss a couple of weeks, and then they may somehow feel that, oh, I've missed 2 or 3 weeks, maybe it's not worth going back. If you know anyone like that, convince them, definitely go back, and we will all personally help them to sort of catch up. And when it comes time for the at the end when we have the exam, then we can sit down and have some special time and just make sure everyone knows what's going to be in the exam, where they need to study. So if you could do that, that would be good, so that we next time at least by next Sunday, in the course of a week, if we could sort of see a few, you know, a few of the old faces, it'd be very good. And it's very important to I know we all have you know, quite busy schedules, but at least if you can't come to the class, at least you should hear it on the net. You know, it's about 1 hour within the course of a week. Very important, because I know that you have missed quite a lot by not hearing the previous lesson. I really set the foundational understanding for this chapter and for chapters 16, 17 and 18, which are all based upon this chapter, in that first lesson. There's a huge relevance, how it is relevant to yourselves, how it is relevant to ISKCON, and how it is relevant to society. In general, we'll cover some of the topics a little bit, but our whole movement is based upon the principle of, if you read the preface of the Bhagavad Gita, perhaps you could read that, read the preface. The preface of the Bhagavad Gita, our whole movement is based upon elevating people above the most mature nature. Yeah. Right? That's our movement. And these are the essential chapters on how that is done. Can you perhaps, who's got a nice, what's that?
Could you pass the passage to
me? Oh, it's quite long,
yeah.
It's very long. Okay, I'll sum it up. Srila Prabhupada is saying there that, you know, this is the purpose of our movement, is to, and he says in there that it's actually the only reason for reading the Bhagavad Gita, is so that one can become elevated beyond the modes of mature nature and help others to. Otherwise, what is the purpose of reading it? Just for entertainment. If we read about the personality of Godhead, our own position, the modes of mature nature, but we never actually become free from the influence of the modes of mature nature, then we've really, you know, wasted our time in one sense. Well, not completely, but we haven't got the benefit. So this previously, what we discussed, Krishna described how, as the father of all living entities, he impregnated the material energy with the living entities. So in doing that, that is described first in the first couple of verses. Krishna, of course, he spent a couple of verses glorifying the knowledge that he was going to give to Arjuna. First and second, to give Arjuna a taste for this knowledge. Then he actually describes that literally the beginning point of our conditioned life is where the Supreme Lord, by his superintendence, he actually creates that combination of the material energy and the spiritual energy. So that is the first point of understanding how we become conditioned in the material world. That's very important. Although it's a very simple statement, that statement, you know, there are philosophers who for thousands and thousands of years try to grapple with the concept of conditioning. Are we eternally conditioned? Are we always entangled in the material world? Or can we become liberated? Do we have some intimate connection with the material energy? All these questions are answered in one simple statement where Krishna says, I impregnated the living entities into the material energy. We immediately understand our original spiritual position, which was transcendental to the material energy, but then due to our particular desires, Krishna places us in the material energy, our conditioned life begins, and then we can immediately understand that because the Supreme Lord is in control of the whole process, that he must also be in control of the process of liberating the living entity from the clutches of material energy. So there's a lot in that very simple statement. So anyway, then Krishna went on to describe how the living entities are conditioned, bound by the modes of material nature. That by the how is one, for those who came last time, how is one bound by the mode of goodness? Yeah?
Satisfaction from knowledge and illumination.
Yeah, one becomes bound by a sense of satisfaction that comes from knowledge and illumination, yes? Happiness, yeah, material happiness. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Knowledge, happiness, superiority, peacefulness. In this way, one is bound in the sense of being conditioned by the material energy. That conditioning, of course, is different from our spiritual nature. So whenever we use the word conditioning, we're always referring to an abnormal condition. Material conditioning. Material condition means that we have our normal spiritual condition, but now we have a new material condition where we are, instead of being engaged in our natural spiritual activities, we're engaged in other material activities, such as the cultivation of material knowledge, such as a sense of happiness in the material world. In this way, we're conditioned. For instance, someone may be in a prison house, and they actually may feel that, you know, when they first go into prison, they may feel, let me get out of here, terrible place. And after, you know, if they have a long sentence, after so many years, they may start to feel that, oh, you know, it's not so bad here. Right? I have my cell. I've got a whole lot of books in my cell. You know, like the Birdman of Alcatraz, right? And people who, you know, they go to prison, they get a doctorate and they get a PhD. So then they actually quite enjoy, now I'm in prison, I'm getting a PhD. But they forget that, you know, you're still in prison. you're in prison with a PhD. You know, it's a little technicality that sort of escapes them because they're conditioned. They just become used to their surroundings. They forget what actual freedom is. That can seem something wonderful, but of course, for people who know what freedom is, who haven't forgotten what freedom is, they understand that this person is very conditioned to think that he's happy in prison studying. How can that be happiness? A free person can understand that. One who is on the platform of the spirit soul, they can understand that how can you be happy in the material world? You're an eternal spirit soul. You're in the material world, which is temporary, limited, miserable. But there's a few privileges. You're able to gather a little bit of knowledge, and perhaps because you don't have to struggle as hard as everyone else, you take that as your happy existence. You only take that as your happy existence because you've forgotten your spiritual freedom and your spiritual privileges. So it's conditioning that. So in the same way, one can be conditioned by the lower modes of nature, such as passion. to be conditioned by passion, who can remember?
Routine reactions.
You become conditioned by a sense of attachment to fruitive activities. So that's again, you know, it's a different type of conditioning, but we see that some people, and you know, predominantly more in this age of Kali, are conditioned by passion, and ignorance, and predominantly it's ignorance. Even passion is becoming a rare commodity in this age of Kali. But people, you know, at least if people have some mode of passion, then there is a sense of happiness that I am working very, very hard and getting some result. Even though the results are, you know, not very wonderful. You know, most people, if they just get anything in their pay packet, but they've got a job these days, they can barely pay the bills, they can barely, you know, educate the children, but still they've got a job and they're getting something, so they're working, getting result, they're happy. A lot of the things that people, you know, that they're working very hard, a lot of the things that you see that they're getting, you know, a home, or, well, we shouldn't really say a home, we should more say like a mortgage. Not much of a home these days. You know, a car. Well, again, I wouldn't say a car, it's like the bank really owns it. What do you...
Private purchase.
So they're getting a whole lot of different things and they feel that they're very, very happy. Putting a huge amount of work into it. You know, massive. You know, most families these days, husband and wife, are very, very rare, right? Except for Janine here. But most husbands and wives these days, you'll find that they're both out working night and day, and still, you know, they're sort of struggling. And the children also, you know, working. People, you know, have no time to bring up children. Children, you know, usually find themselves in crèches and what have you. People don't have time to eat properly. It's all, you know, a quick meal on the way to work, you know.
Takeaway.
Was that? Takeaway. Coffee and something. Bit of burnt toast. Coffee and burnt toast on your way out to work. You know, TV dinner when you come home. Okay. So, but people, you know, most people in this situation, really what they're getting for a huge amount of work is not very much, but they're happy because they're working and getting result. That's the important point. And they're conditioned to that. Right? Doesn't matter how hard they work and how poor the result is, I'm working, I'm getting result, I'm happy man. That's a mode of passion. and they are quite happy to do that for the entirety of their life. In fact, if people retire, many people, they retire at 60, 65, they're forced to retire, and then they become suicidal or depressed. That now I can no longer, you know, work and get my result like that. That's just, they're so conditioned. That is the standard of happiness. If that is not there, that now I can sit down and just relax, and that becomes a great source of misery for them. So, and therefore, you will find that they will try and fill that gap, because they're so conditioned that that is their happiness, they will fill that gap with something else. So they just go play bowls. You know, we'll throw the ball down the thing. You know, it's a fruit of activity. I throw the ball, I hit the little black one or the red one, whatever like that, a little clap, you know, a little bit of prestige, there's a pendant. So it's the same thing, it's a token fruit of activity which has no real meaning, but they're still engaged in something which resembles fruit of activities. And therefore they're happy. Now those in the mode of goodness, what are they conditioned by? What's that?
Ignorance.
What did I say?
Goodness.
Sorry. Those in the mode of ignorance, what are they conditioned by?
Illusion.
Delusion.
Madness.
Madness and sleep. Yeah. very, very low conditioning, form of conditioning in the material world. The spirit soul has, as the Acharyas put it, literally come to the point where they have the spirit soul has really just lost all intelligence. There's not much light there, you know. And even if they're capable of doing work, they don't want to do work. And if they do some work, they have no idea how to get a good result, and therefore they only get a bad result, which causes suffering. That's the mode of ignorance, madness, illusion, sleep, like that. So they're very much conditioned, and their existence is there's no real control over their existence, and all their activities are suffering. But they take that still as their form of happiness. And still, you know, as horrible as it is, that is actually taken as happiness. So, you see that people, they're very miserable, and then in order to somehow cover that misery, they will take intoxication. So we see in this day and age huge amounts of, what's that?
Drugs,
yeah, huge amounts of intoxication. And when they get that intoxication, you know, they've got their little bag of dope, their little bottle of plonk, and they just feel, oh, this is my great source of happiness, according to how many fluid ounces or what have you. I have 25 fluid ounces worth of happiness. 25 fluid ounces worth of happiness with so many percentage of alcohol, which is the percentage of real happiness in my 25 fluid ounces. So then, of course, for a lot of them, intoxication is very important. So let's just sleep it off. Let's just sleep. You know, there's nothing. Life is miserable. We'll just do nothing. Vegetate. Because these days people don't even sleep. They actually sleep awake. It's called television. They turn the television on and they sit in front of that. And they're actually, it's the brain. The brain is registering. the eyes appear to be open, but actually the brain waves are like it's sleeping, dead. So in this way, they're sleeping while they're sleeping. They're sleeping while they're awake, and in between that, they take intoxication. The television, the sleeping, the intoxication, or venting their anger and frustration on someone, these are the sources of happiness. And they feel a great sense of, that is their happiness. Life becomes so disturbing, and if they can just, vent their rage on someone, the lights turn green, and 3 seconds later, the 70-year-old lady in front of us hasn't moved. We jump out of the car, kick her windows in, scare the hell out of her, jump back in the car, and we feel, yes, now I'm happy. I've got that anger out of this. So that, although it's a miserable existence, people take this condition, they're conditioned to feel that in ignorance I'm happy, in passion I'm happy, in goodness I'm happy. But all of them are actually suffering in the material world. Now the problem is, as Krishna points out in text number 10, is that the modes actually don't just remain the same. So we're all in a very dangerous position. Someone in the mode of goodness may think, I would hate to be in the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. I'm situated in knowledge, but we actually see the people, you know, who are situated in knowledge and generally quite peaceful and self-controlled, also, especially in this age, become influenced by sometimes the occasional, you know, outburst of anger and depression. You know, sometimes people in the mode of passion who are, you know, quite enthusiastic to work and get a result, all of a sudden give up and, you know, become depressed. Or sometimes they may sit and reflect, what the hell am I doing? I just, in this way, the modes of passion, according to our karma, we have a, it's interesting because we have a certain destiny whereby we're forced to experience life under certain modes of material nature. And at the same time, so as that destiny, as those karmas come to an end, then the influence of those particular modes may come to an end. And when one mode of material nature becomes less prominent, or when the other two become less prominent, then that allows the other one to become prominent. So for instance, when passion and ignorance do not become prominent, then the mode of goodness will become prominent. And when the mode of goodness and passion does not become prominent, then the mode of ignorance will become prominent. We are forced to some degree according to our karma, but at the same time we also have our free will, which means that when a certain destiny of influence may be finished, we also have an opportunity to associate with particular modes according to our free will, in order to, and by associating with a particular mode, that becomes prominent. So that is possible as well. And according to our free will, the things that we associate with, therefore, you know, we've got here on the board here, you can see that certain things that you associate with will actually make a particular mode of material nature prominent. The different scriptures that you study, so for instance, you know, one may be reading Mein Kampf from, you know, Adolf Hitler, you know, and certainly one may be experiencing association with the mode of ignorance. One may be reading different religious scriptures which recommend various processes for, you know, so-called religious principles for eating meat under regulated principles. Or one may be reading Vaishnava scriptures which recommend that one should be completely vegetarian. So, the different scriptures that we study, the eating, we eat in a certain way. We can eat foods in the mode of goodness, foods in the mode of passion or ignorance. These are discussed further on as we go through. What we're drinking, because if we're taking intoxication, that will cause a mode of ignorance. The association, the people we're associating with, the environment, such as, who would give an example of environment?
Main heart of the city.
If we're in the city, it's like the mode of passion. Certain parts of the city are the mode of ignorance, like the hotels and brothels and what have you.
Crown Casino,
yeah, that's right. And other parts are more passion and ignorance, some are more passion, and then in the country there may be, you know, more the mode of goodness. Or you can go to a Hare Krishna temple and be in a transcendental place.
The farm.
Or the farm, yeah. the times of the day that you do things.
Morning,
get up before sunrise, very good for situating yourself. People who generally get up before sunrise during the Brahma Muhurta, about an hour and a half before sunrise, it allows them to lock into the mode of goodness and remain there throughout the course of the day. Right? And people who get up after that, of course, progressively they're going to wake up and lock into the mode of passion or lock into the mode of ignorance. You notice that, especially for those who have children. You know, if you get up in the morning and you know, you sit there, it's very, very peaceful. You can read, you can chant, you worship the deities, right? And you know, around about what, 7:30, 8, you hear, you know, gradually all hell starting to break loose up the other end of the house in the children's bedrooms. You hear a little pitter-patter of feet. And of course, once the children get up, you know, and the partner, and you know, the phone starts ringing and what have you, and then you start thinking of the different things, and then you're trying to peacefully meditate upon that sloka, it's just very, very difficult, you know. It's you can just see the mode of activity increase. In the morning, the activity is predominantly less, you know. You can, there's you sit quietly, there's not a lot of activity. As a mode of passion comes in, huge amounts of activity, and the more intense, more passionate things become. And then, of course, you know, after a certain amount of activity where people become frustrated with the mode of passion, because the mode of passion ultimately produces, the mode of passion will produce mixed misery and happiness according to the amount of piety in that passionate activity. The more impious the passionate activity, the more suffering accrues for that passionate activity. So where we say the mode of passion creates misery and happiness, according to the content of impious activity in that pious action, will produce more suffering. Right? So as people get along through the afternoon, they've been very, very, very active, and then they start to get a bit more frustrated, you know, it's not really, it's producing, you know, they're realising, oh, I'm putting so much effort, I'm still not happy, like that. And then, you know, the mode of ignorance starts to come in, and people start to get tired and, you know, depressed, and, you know, like that. So you can see sometimes different times of the day where the mode of ignorance comes in. Like that, they become short-tempered and angry and, you know, tired and distressed, like that. And then after, you know, maybe depending on how people do it, they might whip down the pub, get a bit of Dutch courage, you know, off they go again, and you know, they're back into the mode of passion and what have you until the next sort of instalment. Or the mode of ignorance gradually comes in around about dusk and what have you. So, different times, but for people getting up and trying to lock into the day when most people are now experiencing some degree of the mode of ignorance, you know, it makes it very hard for them even to do their, you know, to lock into the mode of passion. You know, you get up and everyone around you is disturbed, and you know, it's like chaos and confusion. So the times that people start their day or start an activity or start a any particular activity will have quite an influence. And meditate. So we may, you know, throughout the course of the day, of course, we're meditating on different things in different ways, and again according to our mental condition, because really all the modes are actually affecting us on a mental level. When you actually think about it, everything that affects us in the material world is really affecting us on a mental level. just as for instance, we all may feel that we, you know, have certain possessions, but it's not like, you know, we're carrying our possessions around with us. It's really a mental thing. Yes, I own this somewhere, and I own this somewhere, and I own that somewhere, but we don't really, they're not, you know, properly connected with us. It's a mental thing. You know, for most people's wealth, you know, they, someone may say, yes, I have, you know, $500,000. Well, for most people who have that $500,000, they'll probably never even see it themselves. It's just, you know, one day there was a little, you know, blip on the computer. That's $500,000 richer. They never ever saw any money. And for a lot of them, they'll never even spend it. And even if they spend it, for a lot of them, will never actually really enjoy it. You know, there's a mental conception of, yes, I'm the proprietor of this. But not really. You know, it's all mental. The same with most things that make people feel that they have some success, or, you know, someone says, you know, I've climbed to the top of Mount Everest. You know, if they climbed up to the top of a, you know, just a building in the city, you know, that amount of times to the same proportion that they would have got to the top of Mount Everest, no one would really care. It's all mental. You know, it's the same thing. You just, you know, you're walking upwards to a certain point. Whether you're walking up, you know, to a particular building that no one cares about, or you're walking up to Mount Everest. If you say to someone, I walked up Mount Everest, it has a certain amount of prestige, which is mental. But really, you're just walking up. So whether you're walking up some stairs, or you're walking up Mount Everest, all you're really doing is walking upwards. One carries prestige that you can mentally, you know, become attached to, and one doesn't. But if you look at our happiness within the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, ultimately is all mental. And what we're meditating upon, apart from the Supreme Lord, of course, who is not different from his mantra, but otherwise, usually what we're meditating upon is one of the modes of material nature. So then, the mantras we chant, again, we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is non-different from the Lord. Other people may chant mantras which are actually literally associated with the modes of passion, ignorance, goodness. You see, you know, my spiritual master said, because he was in the army when he was younger, and their mantra was, you know, kill the Kong. And they would chant, you know. You know, but then you see, these people have different mantras, which are, you know, something in the mode of ignorance, you know, just very, very horrific, you know, it's just based upon killing and harm and what have you. So people have certain mantras which may be in the modes of ignorance, passion, goodness. What's the mantra in the mode of goodness?
Shanti, shanti.
Shanti, shanti, shanti. Yeah. let there be peace. Yeah, that's right. Mm.
Can I just ask you something?
Yeah.
Sometimes you wake up in a mode of goodness time. I find this during the week. And I eat prasad on a particular day, with a sandwich, I won't mention. And after I've eaten that prasad, I just get low.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah, it's, there are certain types of foods that we should eat at different types of the day. From about 4 o'clock, the body actually produces solids, and it's best to eat light. You know, the metabolism of the body is different earlier in the day and at lunch. And even though you may eat the same foods, the body will digest them in a certain way and produce a different effect. But from about 4 o'clock on, the body produces solids, makes you feel very heavy, tired, like that. And of course, what will happen then is it will naturally make you feel a bit tired. But of course, you can't sleep, you know, from 4 o'clock on, because if you sleep from that time, it usually people wake up with a headache or feeling, you know, somewhat, you know, mucousy or what have you.
Is that 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Or
yeah.
Morning?
Yeah. 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Because it is similar that, you know, different modes of material nature are working, and they're working even within the body. And therefore, you know, even eating is best done at certain times and not others. Prasadam, you make spiritual advancement whenever you eat prasadam, Krishna prasadam, of course. But we also, one of the principles of the mode of goodness, which we read about here, possibly in the next verse, is that the symptom of the mode of goodness is when all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge. And that means that we have a proper understanding, and actually Prabhupada says in the purport there, one who is situated like that, they know how to eat, you know, when to eat. What does it say in the purport? What's his exact words there? Is it the next verse? What's that? What's that?
Two eyes, 2 ears, 2 nostrils, the mouth, the
genitals,
and the hands.
Yeah. What does it say? A devotee knows when to eat, sleep.
When every gate is eliminated by the symptoms of goodness, it should be understood that one has developed the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, one can see things in the right position.
Yeah.
One can hear things in the right position.
See things in the right position. Hear things in the right position. Yeah.
Taste things in the right position.
Taste, did you say? Taste, yeah.
Yeah. The right position. One becomes cleansed inside and outside.
Yes.
In every gate there is development of the symptoms of happiness, and there is position of goodness.
Yes. Yeah. So, that is a symptom of goodness, that we are eating in such a way that it is, you know, creating happiness, and you know, a healthy situation, and placing us in the most wholesome situation. If we're eating in such a way, of course, even Krishna prasadam, and it is causing us some health concern, lack of energy, or what have you, we should, being situated in the mode of goodness, we should identify that, correct it. A person in the mode of passion won't. They won't be able to, because they'll be attached to the, you know, the taste. And so they, you know, they'll just say, well, it's, and what happens, of course, is for many devotees, most of us, we just say, oh, it's Krishna prasadam, and that justifies everything. It's Krishna prasadam, and you just eat it, and you make spiritual advancement. But we can do. Srila Prabhupada points out in the Srimad Bhagavatam that there are 9 different processes of devotional service: hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the deity, like that, Shravana Kirtan. Worshipping the deity, one aspect of worshipping the deity is eating prasadam. It is, we honourable prasad that is offered to the deities. Prabhupada points out that then those nine activities plus three modes means that therefore there are 81 different varieties of devotional service in the mixed modes, in the modes mixed with the modes of material nature. So we can hear in the mode of goodness, we can hear in the mode of passion, we can hear transcendental subject matters in the mode of ignorance. We can take prasadam, influenced by the mode of goodness, take prasadam influenced by the mode of passion, take prasadam influenced by the mode of ignorance. We can perform all the different varieties of devotional service mixed by any one of the three modes. Makes 81 varieties of devotional service mixed by the modes of nature. Then of course there's pure devotional service whereby one is transcendental. Yep.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, we are reading in Canto 3, 29th chapter.
Yeah.
The Lord is explaining about this different modes of
service. You're doing that now?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
We finished that. Okay. It was very interesting to read that. Mm. Devotional service in mixed modes of nature, mode of goodness,
yes.
Mode of passion.
Yes.
If you have time, you can go through that chapter.
That's right. And
Canto 29th chapter, I think it is 8 to 12 or something.
I'll tell you the number.
That's fine.
It's
8 to 12, I think.
Third Canto, chapter 29, text 8 to 12.
Can I ask another question?
Yes.
Sometimes you'll have, if they're the two most important services in the temple where you've got a guard and really protect who does the services, if you pujari and if you cook. Right? Mm. Now sometimes, not everybody is chanting. Pujari, I'm for sure. No? Cooking? No, not everybody. Now, how significant is that? But I mean, and sometimes they're not
maybe
even.
Well, they're
something else.
It's when I was a young devotee, it was these things were paramount of importance. You know, when people came to Krishna consciousness. There were certain things you were trained in that you understood this is primary, this is not just some of the secondary things that you may or may not need to worry about. One of the fundamental pillars of our society is the consciousness of the cooks. And they have to be situated in the mode of goodness. That's why, of course, only the Brahmanas can cook. And at all. Well, in the Hare Krishna kitchen. That's the proper standard. Yeah. Non Brahmanas don't cook anything, you know.
Scarcity of people.
What's that?
We don't get all the such standard people in the sense. Many people are touching every year.
Yeah, previously, you know, the Brahmins cooked. You had, that means you had people who were trained, initiated, further trained, and then you considered, okay, these people maintain a high degree of the mode of goodness, they can cook. It means that, you know, their cleanliness, their consciousness, their punctuality, you know, everything is in proper order and they will cook. If people were assisted, they assisted under the Brahmanas. They were not trained, but sometimes they were trained even to assist. You had to have a certain qualification. If the Brahmanas thought, you know, this person cannot follow my sort of lead, you know, I'm trying to get this person to cook, you know, in a manner which is clean and, you know, in a nice state of mind, but this person is not fit to be in the kitchen, and they would not have that person as an assistant. The Brahmanas would always light the fire, of course, and then there were certain things that, you know, especially with cooking grains, roasting grains or anything, the Brahmanas would do that. And once they had done that, then of course they may ask the non-Brahmanas to, you know, they'll be chopping your vegetables, throw this in, wash this, bring this here, like that. But especially with cooking the grains and lighting the food, all of that.
Fire.
Especially when you're dealing with fire, everything was done by the Brahmanas. And non-Brahmanas, even though they were assisting, there were still things that they weren't doing, weren't able to do. Now what's happened over the course of so many years, because the amount of cooking that we do is a lot more, that more and more people have had the opportunity to assist, and over the course of time, people then take that, what the assistants are doing as the new standard. So that gradually, it comes to the point where, for instance, someone who is a Brahmana may have had so many assistants, and that Brahmana may have said, can you light that stove, that jet at some stage, and they've lit the jet, and can you, you know, throw a bit of rice in there and fry it up. Now because the Brahmana has asked them to do that, perhaps in the mood of a hurry or what have you, that person has then taken that, yes, now I'm, you know, frying. Several other assistants have seen that and said that this is the new standard. No one's, you know, and gradually it has actually become a standard where now anyone can just go in there, and people have actually completely forgotten what the standard is in the Hare Krishna temple. To just to give you an example, always comes to my mind, but when I was a brahmachari in Sydney temple, there was one of the Brahmanis, she was cooking the Raj Bhoga, the lunchtime offering of the deities, and the phone rang, and someone said it was for her, so she went off to get it. But she was cooking a chutney and a few other things, and I happened to be standing by the kitchen, completely sushi. I knew that she was going to burn the chutney, and I thought, well, I'm not supposed to touch it, because I'm not a Brahmana, but if I don't stir it, she's going to burn the chutney, because she's chutney. So I went in and I just gave a bit of a stir till she came back, and when she came back in, she slapped my hand. Don't you touch that.
That wasn't supposed to be initiated in a different...
That was the move, but that was the move.
If you're from a different sampradaya, but you are initiated.
What?
If you're from a different sampradaya, but you're initiated.
The important thing is that one is situated in the mode of goodness, the qualification of goodness.
Okay.
You know, you're better off to have someone who's actually situated in the mode of goodness, cooking for the devotees, even if they haven't been second initiated, than someone who has been second initiated and is actually not manifesting the symptoms of the mode of goodness.
Thank you.
And that is sometimes, in one way, that is where some of the concessions have come in. Sometimes people are not Brahmanas, but they're chanting Hare Krishna and they are really solidly situated in the mode of goodness, and therefore, you know, yes, cook, help, assist. But people have lost sight of, you know, that important point that the concession was given because they're considered to be able to maintain the mode of goodness while they're cooking in the kitchen, even though they may not be initiated or even second initiated. Others have just seen that anyone can come and assist. I'm also an assistant, I'm qualified. But the qualification is the mode of goodness. So that's you see that especially in the kitchen. We're getting more and more dharmas also, you know, who help out with deity worship. The other day I saw one brahmana training up a new brahmana, and but you could see that in one sense the previous brahmanas are not always properly trained themselves. Did you give an example? You know, when I address the deities, I stand on a towel, and you know, with the deities we don't allow that which touches their feet to touch the deity or the paraphernalia. And I've packed up all my paraphernalia or the deity's jewellery and everything, put it in the basket, and I was about to walk out and I had my hands like this. He picked up my towel, which I've been standing on, threw it on top. I couldn't take it out because I had my hands full. So I took it out, but I had to come back and correct it. But he was training up the new brahmana. So we have to be mindful, of course, of the qualification of being situated in those goodness and understand what that is. And that's what I was saying, that you know, in our previous talk where we did discuss how this is relevant to us as individuals, as a society, and for society at large, as you go through these verses, of course you see that Srila Prabhupada points out the horrific situation of the world, which is now operating under the mode of passion, under the mode of ignorance, and barely any education in goodness, which means people don't know things properly. So therefore, this information is important for society at large. There's no question of happiness for society at large. If people think, I will get money and be happy, they're wrong. You'd be situated in the mode of goodness, you'd be happy. As an individual, for us to actually progress spiritually, we have to rise above the modes of ignorance, passion, to goodness, and then to transcendental goodness. And as a society, we can't introduce the mode of goodness to society at large if we can't recognise it ourselves. And some of the standards, which are very, very important, almost fundamental, it's surprising now that devotees do not even recognise them as a principle, whereas previously they were, you know, very important. It'd be just as for instance, now we know you all chant 16 rounds, but you imagine in 2 years' time, if we're sitting here, we're doing Bhakti Shastri, and someone says, do you have to chant 16 rounds? That's an initiated devotee, is that right? And you think, how far have things, you know, slipped that someone is asking that? But from my perspective, when you see how people have lost the understanding and the importance of the mode of goodness, and you know, it is the same thing. That so therefore, when devotees engage other people to serve Krishna, we have to be firmly situated in the mode of goodness and transcendental goodness, even better. Transcendental goodness means there's not even a trace of passion and ignorance. Completely good. Whereas material goodness, there's little traces, actually. There's little traces of passion and ignorance. But we have to be situated, and when we're engaging other people, generally have to understand that they're pretty much steeped in the modes of passion and ignorance, and they don't just have a free run in the kitchen, because that's just like letting the mode of passion and ignorance just open up the door. Come on, come again, round you go, here you come. Because how do we let, you know, Association. You know, by association, we're just opening up the door. Tamagun, Rajagun, in you come. And just have a free run around our kitchen. By all of these are all doorways to an invitation to the modes of passion and ignorance. You know, come in, into my life, and just have a bit of a run around and let's see what sort of effects we get. But for a devotee, we only open up these doorways when we know that they're particularly allowing the mode of goodness, you know, and particularly the transcendental mode of goodness. So we're choosing our association. So in essence, we've sort of covered a lot of the points, but I'll just read the translation of some of these verses. So we read 11. The manifestation of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge. Text number 12. When there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavour, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. And text 13. When there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, darkness, inertia, madness and illusion are manifested. Makes it very easy to distinguish. And we should, you know, these should be second nature that we can recognise within ourselves, within our environment, within all these different factors. If they're producing that result. Text number 14. Now, Krishna says, when one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains the pure higher planets of the great sages. That means, according to the degree of one's goodness, one can go higher and higher to Brahma Loka. So, you know, if one may has a certain degree of the mode of goodness, they will go to somewhere in the heavenly planets, but to the purity, to the degree that there's, you know, they're more fixed in that mode of goodness, they reach up to Brahma Loka. The result of pious action, when one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth amongst those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. So at the time of death, that predominant mode will determine one's activities. But we, you know, this these couple of verses here are described in verse 18 again. If we look at 18, that Krishna describing the effects. So they're the characteristics of the modes, and then he describes the nature of death in the modes. In text number 18, he says a very similar thing, that those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets, those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets, and those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish world. Because death in one of the modes is a particular effect of the modes as well, and stated twice, almost in two categories here.
Truly, when you are telling that a person dies in a mode of ignorance or whatever it is, it's fine, you can say something. But what if a person dies in an accident, or a patient who dies after a coma?
Mm.
Then what kind of mode of, which mode they are already there? Accident is a sudden accident, he dies, or coma. So what do you say, which kind of person it is?
Yeah. That in the 18th verse there, what it's describing is that there's a particular mode of material nature which is prominent at that particular time, at the time of one's death, if one has lived prominently. So for instance, those who have lived like brahmanas, at the time of death, they're quite likely to be elevated to higher planets. It's not necessarily that someone who's lived their whole life in mode of ignorance, and then at the moment of death, they just happen to sit down and reflect on the nature of life, and for a few brief moments, they're in the mode of goodness when they die, that they will attain the heavenly planets. Nor is it that someone who's a brahmana, who's, you know, or brahmani, who spent their life in the mode of goodness, and actually at the time of death, they may have actually been influenced by the mode of ignorance or passion. You know, they've been situated with mind and sense control predominantly throughout the course of life. At the time of death, there may be, you know, some, you know, material desire becomes prominent in their mind. They become very attached to something in the mode of passion. Still, they're more likely to go to the heavenly planets because they're predominantly in goodness.
I feel it being good that, like, at the time of death, if one sees a vision of Lord Jagannath, then all other memories are erased. And, like,
that's right, but that's not easy to do. Think of Lord Jagannath.
just a vision, like, let's say at the time of death, like everything flashes in front of your eyes.
Yeah, usually not Jagannath, but usually everything we've been attached to throughout the course of our life. So, for instance, at the time of death, for most people, even, you know, in that split second, even if in the course of their memories, they also perhaps had, you know, the vision of Rathiatra flash within their eye. But if what a person does at the time of death is that of all the things that they see, they latch on to that which they're most attached to, you know, with, you know, they latch onto it with everything that they can. Oh no, this! You know, Lord Jagannath, I lost Jagannath, I'm going to lose this, I'm going to lose, but no! I cannot lose this! Death, don't take this away! And they will be absorbed intensely in that, which, you know, can completely, overshadow their opportunity to meditate upon Lord Jagannath, who may have kindly appeared before them at that time. So, these things can't be done artificially. You know, to think of Lord Jagannath, to think of the Holy Name and Krishna at the time of death is a culmination of a life's work, dedication. It can happen by accident, but that's, you know, quite rare, and we really shouldn't, most people are just going to latch on to something in the modes of material nature which they're particularly attached to. And it's going to overshadow. You see, for instance, even devotees. You may have devotees who have chanted Hare Krishna, they've worshipped Lord Jagannath, they've worshipped the various deities and what have you. And then again, they can become enamored by things in the material world. And at the time of death, even though they've been devotees for several years, instead of thinking of their devotional service, they may actually think of their material attachments. in which case they will come back in order to fulfill those particular material desires and to be given an opportunity to carry on from where they left off with their spiritual life. They don't lose the opportunity of whatever spiritual advancement they've made. So, you know, therefore, you know, you will see sometimes people have had obviously some connection with Krishna consciousness in a previous life, who take birth and who are, you know, you can see that they're given, just like Allen Ginsberg, or Ginsberg is what Prabhupada used to call it. So Prabhupada said to him, you know, that he's obviously been blessed by Krishna. But even at the time he said that, Ginsberg admitted that, you know, he was, you know, he was still eating meat. He only just given up cigarettes a couple of days ago, probably to take them up a couple of days later. And what have you? So he, you know, he was immersed in material life, and yet Srila Prabhupada had pointed out there's certainly some blessing from Krishna, you know, which is coming from a previous life. So it shows that you can have some Krishna consciousness, but at the time of death, if that person has still had some spiritual association, if their predominant mood is again absorption in particular mode, they will take birth in that mode of material nature. Prabhupada says that in this verse. Text number 15. He says, those who are actually serious about human life should take the mode of goodness and in good association transcend the modes and become situated in Krishna consciousness. This is the aim of human life. Otherwise, there is no guarantee that the human being will again attain to the human status. There are examples where Srila Prabhupada describes that the various turtles and what have you, and you know, some of the rivers and what have you of Jamuna are actually fallen sannyasis who have actually, you know, taken birth as animals. And, you know, because of that, they've actually been on the path of liberation, become so entangled again in the modes of ignorance and passion that they've actually taken birth as animals. So many of the, you know, the turtles and, you know, different creatures in some of the holy rivers are like that. They're fallen, sainted people. Because of their sainted activities, they get to swim around in the sacred river. But because of their fallen activities, they take birth as an animal. You can't, you know, Krishna can do both. Krishna can reward someone for all their spiritual activities and all their activities in the mode of goodness, and at the same time give them the reaction to being absorbed in the mode of ignorance. He can do both. Someone might say, oh, you know, I've been a brahmana, you know, and now I'm going to absorb myself in the mode of ignorance. You know, what can Krishna do? You know, because I have to get the results of my brahminical activities. And Krishna say, yes, I'll give you the results of your brahminical activities, and I'll give you the results of the mode of ignorance. Perfectly. This part?
No, that's
chapter
16
also. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, if you consider that in 10,000 years from now, when the Hare Krishna movement is gone, there'll be no traces of the mode of goodness at all. At that stage, you know, gradually as Kali Yuga progresses, people will be eating each other. The state the mode of ignorance will be so, you know, the mode of ignorance now is terrifying, what people are doing in this world now. Right? And that is with, you know, the Hare Krishna movement and some, you know, some traces of goodness where people understand what should and shouldn't be done. But in 10,000 years from now, it gets worse and worse until there's not a trace of goodness. Can you imagine living in that time? No one wants to be here. The best thing is to, you know, go back to Godhead. Become perfect in this life.
Yeah, it's just what's kind of frightening also is that I mean, you were stressing the importance of this information, but I guess even within our own society and congregations, like, you know, we should, you know, it's so important to know about this
It is, it's very important, and because the modes are always competing, things don't stay in a constant flux, and always, and especially in this age, we will always be fighting against the reintroduction of the modes of passion and ignorance. That will always be there in our individual lives. Well, of course, first thing is, you know, for many people who come to Krishna consciousness, they're already in the mode of ignorance and passion, and there's no question of these influences reintroducing. They're already steeped in them. They don't even know what is the platform. They've never been on the platform of continually in the mode of goodness. First, they have to come to that platform of living life always in the mode of goodness. Then they have to be very careful not to allow those modes to re-enter, because that is the nature of this age, and it is the nature of the modes themselves. But especially in this age, you know, the modes of passion and ignorance are particularly strong and prevalent. You know, more so. So although they're always coming back to supremacy in this age, they're coming back stronger, more powerful, more often, and they... you know, everything, like we have a list of things there which are associated with the mode of three modes. Generally, if you go out to get food these days, you can't find the food in the mode of goodness. In some countries, it becomes very difficult. You know, you have to eat meat, you have to eat fish, you have to eat this or that. You know, and if you want to eat in the mode of goodness, there are potatoes. Potatoes and weed. You know, some countries, you go travelling around some different parts of the world, just a load of ignorance. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, when he went to China, I think it was, and they made him a feast for his Vyasa Puja or something like that, and he was always just really careful. He was checking everything. What is this? And what is that? And they assured him anyway. You know, he didn't want to touch so many things. They brought him in this cake, and they're saying he was completely vegetarian. And he just didn't like the looks of it. So he finally traced out the ingredients. It was actually made from crushed insects. Question test, but you know, even with a lot of information, you know, please cook a vegetarian feast. It was beyond them. But they still get that cake in, that crushed insect. You know, just show you how deeply absorbed people are. Just so far from what is right and what is wrong, what is no good, they've lost it. But in our society, in our temple, you know, we should always be on guard. And I tell you personally, if you walk around, if you, you know, take a careful look at, you know, this chapter, and then have another look at some of the devotees and devotional activities, you'll probably be surprised to find how much passion and ignorance is sort of infiltrating, and of course our own personal lives, and it should be a real eye opener.
How do we manage that?
What's that?
How do we cope with that? What do we do here?
Well, the first thing is to situate ourselves in the mode of, first to be able to recognise the mode of goodness, we have to be situated in it. And then to just, in whatever activity that we're performing, we, you know, we, it says here that, you know, people, this is the big one, association with people. That is how we associate it with a particular mode of the material energy. If we're situated in the mode of goodness, then we're giving the mode of goodness. We're giving that association. We're giving people the opportunity to associate with us and also become situated within goodness. That's very important. And that's the whole, you know, the very foundation stone of our movement, isn't it? That we situate ourselves in goodness and we revolutionise a misdirected civilisation who are in the modes of passion and ignorance.
My spiritual master is very, very adamant about one thing.
Mm.
Right, very early, after 2 weeks.
Yes.
Do your chanting, do your readings before your service starts.
Yes.
And he says, unless you'll be guaranteed. But now the logic of temple life doesn't function like that. If your service is ending at 9 o'clock, because then you have to be in bed if it's 7:30.
Mm. I have the same difficulty because a lot of my home programs finish at about 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I get home sometimes 12:30. It makes a really difference.
That's
it is a difference. Yeah, it can be a difference. So. But
it's a shore of protection.
Yes.
Prabhuji, when you are saying that the person who books
the
mode of goodness or the initiated and other things, like what I doubt is in general, I see that a person in 24 hours is not fixed at one particular mode. As you, the previous verse 14:10 says that one mode or the other is predominating. But now, for example, I am situated in mode of goodness for 10 hours from the morning, but in the evening when I went to the kitchen, I may be full of mode of passion then or ignorance. So how do we exactly see that? What he is situated actually in what mode? Is it all the way, whole 24 hours, it is changing? Mode of goodness. We are trying to be in the mode of goodness.
You can, I can see you in a hurry there. Hurry it's the, there's a predominance. So, you know, for instance, in the course of a week, if our 90% of our waking time has been dedicated to getting some fruited result in the material world, we're in the mode of passion. Even if when we're, you know, we come to the temple and, you know, certain amounts, certain parts, important parts of the week can be in the mode of goodness, but, you know, if our life is consumed generally with some particular fruit of results, we're trying to get something in the material world, the mode of passion is obviously our predominant mode.
So it depends on the whole week schedule, how it was and what kind of mode it was predominant in for the whole week. So we can at least trace out that, yes, the last week I was full of mode of ignorance, so naturally for the next week also I mean.
we have to understand what's predominant, right? By daily, weekly, monthly, course of the year. you can't really say that you're sort of in the mode of goodness and but then it's changing. That's actually more sense of someone's in the mode of patient ignorance. If someone's actually in the mode of goodness, the changes are not as often because they're steady. One of the symptoms is that they have knowledge and they're steady. So even though there may be the influences of the mode of passion and ignorance, they're not affected by the, you know, as soon as you say that someone's changing like that, you can immediately count out that they're predominantly in the mode of goodness. Right? It's more passion and ignorance. Okay, so now we've got two, alright, they're in passion and ignorance. If they're very active, they're more like passion. If they can't even get that together, they're more like ignorance. So most people, according to that scenario you gave, are probably influenced by the mode of passion.
But there is always a chance that a person who is in mode of goodness may sometimes fall back to mode of...
Yes, but it's not constant. Otherwise they're not in the mode of goodness predominantly. To be predominant in the mode of goodness, there's stability. As soon as you say they're changing all the time, then you can immediately say that person's not predominant in the mode of goodness. I mean, they must be predominant in the mode of passion, with some ignorance. That shows, again, the lack of understanding of what is the mode of goodness, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If devotees are thinking like that, I'm in the mode of goodness, but then at lunchtime I was in the mode of passion, and then you know, afternoon I was in the mode. Then where was the question of the mode of goodness? Right? That steady platform, they're just influenced back and forth. It means that no understanding of the mode of goodness. The understanding of the mode of goodness is not there. How can one be situated in the mode of goodness?
Okay. Hare Krishna.